Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel LaRue, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And this is a fun one because I actually get to talk about the NBA Finals, what's going on with Drew Schiller and Grant Lifman, who are going to take over the Locked On Warriors podcast from me at the end of the season. As many of you know, that could be as soon as tomorrow, but we don't know exactly when it's going to be. And so we wanted to have a conversation about where the finals are and everything else that, like that. And we'll start with Drew. Where are you right now in terms of your background with the team and just kind of your quick thoughts on the finals so far? And of course, we'll go into more depth later.
Well, I grew up in the Bay Area. Grant and I grew up. We went to middle school and high school together. And so I watched a lot of bad Warriors basketball growing up. And it kind of just so happened that right when I finished my college days, the Warriors got good right as I entered into kind of my young adulthood. And so it was kind of perfect timing. And I also entered into the sports media world. And so I've watched a lot of really good basketball over the last 5 years or so. And watching the NBA Finals has been, for the third straight year, has been surreal, as I'm sure you guys probably feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. Drew, you know, one thing about Drew also is he's going to be modest and he's not going to say it, but Drew is a star athlete growing up. And, you know, he played college ball at Stanford. So I've always been just the other guy who's the fan. You know, I'm not as athletic as Drew, even though, you know, I'd like to think I am. So, you know,
yeah,
for
you're
me,
not.
I was. Thanks, Drew. For me, it was always, you know, I was just a Warriors fan my whole life. I was actually just watching the other day on NBA TV. They were showing the game when Anton Jameson put up 51 and Kobe put up 51. And I'm watching that and I see, you know, like Bobby Sura's out there and Larry Hughes. And I'm thinking about that's my days growing up is watching that team. And it's very unfortunate that that's how my mind goes. That's what my mind was shaped around of basketball. That's what I thought basketball was like. And that's a little scary. But, you know, I'm just excited to be working with the team now for, you know, for we do a show called Warriors Outsiders on NBC Sports Bay Area. And, you know, we get to talk about the Warriors and I get to be a little more biased than Drew because Drew does a little more with the team. But we have so much fun and I'm loving this run. And I don't take it for granted any day because we're watching beautiful basketball and it is exciting basketball.
Danny, that was the first usage of Grant finding a way to get his name into the podcast with the word granted. He doesn't take it for granted.
Hey,
that happens,
whatever
that
works.
Happens quite a bit.
I have a name that can't happen really with, so it never really does, but whatever works. And like, I think that the context with the Warriors is so interesting, especially in terms of the way that other people talk about the team. I've done, you know, just the nature of my work. I talk with people who are in different places in it. And like the suffering of the Warriors fan base is very misunderstood in elements of it. It's something that when I was working on my book, that was really interesting. And like, just the sheer amount of pain and irrelevance that was around before this recent, you know, basically the last 5 years it's a part of the story. It's not the whole story, but I think it's context that matters for what's happening now. And, you know, that this is something very different from those really good Lakers teams at any point in the past you want to pick, or the Celtics, where those were really blue blood franchises. The Warriors have had success in their past, but they do not have that legacy.
And so as a result of that, do you think that Warriors fans, particularly on Twitter, have a little bit more of a arrogant nature to themselves? Or do you think that is kind of how every fan base is when their team is really good?
Little column A, little more column B. I think that Warriors, I think that something that happens, you hear this a lot with comics, is that generally comics, you know, they had something tough in their upbringing, and that's part of the reason why they're funny, is, you know, maybe they were like, not necessarily bullied, but maybe they were made fun of as a kid, maybe they were awkward or something like that. I feel like that's what Warriors fans are, is that they got this pain that honed their edges on this, and then now they're just throwing those sharp edges at everybody else. And
well, I think, yeah, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I was thinking also, is there anything more offensive to a Warriors fan that's been a longtime Warriors fan than anyone calling them a bandwagoner? Because it's like, I just went through 20 years of pain or whatever it was, and now I'm enjoying this, and now you're going to come out and say I'm a bandwagon guy? Like, that will set off any Warriors fan.
Yeah, I think that it will. The other challenge with that, though, is for me, I just let that sort of thing roll off. It's also funny because I didn't grow up a Warriors fan. I was... just the way that it happened for me, I was aware of it. You know, I'd follow it when they were good and things like that. But it wasn't in my DNA because I didn't come from a basketball family. I got into basketball later in life. But I was
with those Ben Howland teams.
Yes, Ben Howland teams. And I thought, but what was so interesting to me was that I still understood the pain, because the pain was why I wasn't a fan in the first place. Because I was somebody who, you know, you could call it being a fair weather fan or whatever. But it was just that it wasn't my sport. I was a football, baseball guy. And so, you know, you kind of don't have that much bandwidth for everything, especially back then. I think of it as being harder to be a basketball fan than the now, where with the internet, you know, like the kids that are growing up now, it's easy to get highlights. You know, you don't have to wake up and watch SportsCenter at 7 a.m. or things like that, like I used to do. So, like, I think that's a part of this, is just to appreciate it for what it is, but also the idea that, I've gotten into so many discussions about this, that other than the fact that they're much better than most of their opponents, this is a very fun team to watch. They play a really enjoyable brand of basketball.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I'm right there with you when it comes to bandwagon. I have to admit that, you know, with the Warriors being so bad and going, what, they made the playoffs in 94 and then not again until 2007. Those mid-2000 Steve Nash Suns teams, the 05, 06, 07 years, I was a huge Steve Nash Phoenix Suns fan. And I wasn't watching too many Warriors games because you just didn't want, it's just, you were kind of felt like you were wasting your time to a certain extent because they were so bad. But now, I'm firmly watching every game.
Yeah, I'm the other guy that's the sick one that watched every Warriors game and truly believed every year going into it that somehow we had a chance that like Danny Fortson was going to be
the future of the Warriors. Really, yeah, right. Good, huh?
I almost did. And I was very naive. But that's why what's happening now, and I totally understand where you're coming from, where, you know, you get to watch beautiful basketball. And for a Warriors fan that did really watch a lot of those terrible years, what's been happening the last 5 years is really cathartic. Like, it's like a release of all these emotions. And I think for a lot of people, that's what the We Believe team was the first time they had passion again in the way that of winning, more than like, I'm supporting a team that's going nowhere.
Or going to watch a game at Oracle or watch a game on TV just because the Warriors were playing against Kobe and the Lakers.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Grant, I feel like I enjoy asking this question of everybody who was a diehard for a long time. What name could I say from those kind of teams, though, put the starkest shiver down your spine?
Put him on the spot. Put Grant on the spot. I like
it. Okay, I have a couple. I was, first of all, not an Eric Dampier fan. And I think for something about Eric Dampier's game was just so boring to me, because not only were the Warriors bad, but at least when the Don Nelson years, they're fun. There's a good rhythm to the game. But Eric Dampier would just slow down the game, and it would just kill me inside. Either that or AC Law taking away minutes from Steph Curry. That's the other one.
I don't think that Eric Dampier could be on an NBA roster this year. Like, during his prime, he just wouldn't be able to be on the floor.
It's true.
He could be a backup center for certain teams. Right. Like, I mean, it's an interesting story that a lot of franchises are walking away from those type of guys now. But I mean, when he was at his best, he was pretty solid at blocking shots, and he could do all that. I think he could be like
when he was in a contract year.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many different options for that sort of stuff. I mean, you can go back, even for people who are a little bit older than we are, go back to the 80s teams, and there are some really painful names back there too. But yeah, I mean, the one that I always think back to is not necessarily a painful one, but I had a small season ticket plan in, I think that was 08, when Jamal Crawford was on the Warriors. And I think back to that team where he was just like, he was on the team for a couple months. It was just a weird circumstance. So I heartily enjoy those, like, wait, that guy was a Warrior, or those sorts of moments, because there are actually a lot of those.
Derek Fisher, Corey Maggette.
My favorite out of all the stories from Jamal Crawford was he comes over to the Warriors, and I'm excited because, you know, I used to watch Jamal Crawford play, and I remember him dropping 50 on, like, what, 8 different teams.
Grant likes inefficient, high volume.
I don't at all. But I actually, Drew knows this. I'm not a Jamal Crawford fan in general right now. But at the time when he came to the Warriors, I was like, oh, that's a name I know. And he comes over and they're interviewing him. And this is like the first time he's at the arena. And they go, what are you most excited about to be on the Warriors? And because we're so bad, it's like there's not much he can say. And he goes, well, I'm a West Coast guy and I'm just excited to eat Jack in the Box again. And
are you serious?
I'll never forget that because I think he's from Seattle. Is he from Washington?
Yes, he is.
And he was very excited to have Jack in the Box again. And I'll never forget that.
And it is an interesting thing with the Warriors and just kind of the times when they've had guys that have not, I mean, Jamal wasn't local, but when they've had guys with a little bit of local flair. And I mean, I remember that I had never really considered Matt Barnes one of those type of guys, but he considered himself, you know, his history with the team. And when he came back, that was extra relevant for him.
Danny, that's a perfect segue that you mentioned Matt Barnes, because maybe we should actually talk about the fact that the Warriors are one win away from capturing their second championship in 3 years, as opposed to talking about Jamal frickin' Crawford.
Yeah, and Matt Barnes has, of course, been central. He's been central to that success. But I think that what's been so intriguing about these finals is that they've delivered on a lot of the things that I expected, but sort of in unexpected ways. So LeBron and Kyrie have both been great at moments. The Warriors guys have all been strong at their times, but a lot of the games manifested it differently. You know, like they came out with the 20 turnovers in game two, and then game three, Draymond's foul trouble. Actually, game two and game three, Draymond's foul trouble. But, you know, we're in a place that is, you know, it's reasonable to expectations. I expect them to win in six, but this
was that your prediction before the series? You said six.
I said six because I just thought LeBron and Kyrie, I gave them deference. My feeling on talent was Warriors in five, which is actually what I think this series, quote unquote, should have been. You know, like, I think the Warriors should have lost game three, but they won, and that's a great story and everything like that. And so, you know, that's where we're going from here.
Yeah, Grant predicted a sweep, so right now he's sitting in a good position.
Yeah, I did predict sweep. Maybe that was just me being smug. But the one thing that Drew and I talked about all year, and especially on our show, was it was very clear throughout the season that Kevin Durant was somebody that the Cleveland's defense, even though they said they're resting it pretty much and waiting till the playoffs or whatever excuse people want to give. But Kevin Durant was somebody that their defense could not handle, because the minute Kevin Durant starts going, it's LeBron James that has to guard him, and that opens up everyone else. So, and their rim defense is terrible. So really, in truth, that was what we were pointing at the whole season, being like, if we got into a series with Cleveland, how do they stop Kevin Durant?
Well, or if they decide to have LeBron guard Durant for the majority of the game, clearly it has taken a toll on him in terms of his production in the second half. I mean, you go through his numbers, game one, 5 for 8, 19 points in the first half. In the second half, he was 4 for 12 with 9 points. In game two, 8 for 12 from the field, 18 points in the first half. Second half, just 4 for 6 from the field, 11 points. And then in game three, he was absolutely incredible in the first half, 27 points, 11 for 14. But in the second half, 4 for 13 from the field and only 12 points. And I know that he has tried to deny the fact that having to guard Durant is wearing him down, but it is. And he finally acknowledged it after game three. He said, absolutely, I was exhausted out there at certain times, but I mean, he can't use that as an excuse.
No, he can't. And that's also why I think that the tactical decision to play fast for Cleveland has been a big mistake. Not only the idea that, you know, the Warriors are, to me, they have superior talent, and generally the more possessions you have, the easier it is for that to reflect in the outcome, but because Cleveland is relying on a small number of guys and they need those guys to be as fresh as possible. And if you're going to play them a lot of minutes, the easiest way to do that is to make their minutes less strenuous.
And then even when LeBron has been on Durant, he hasn't been able to stop him at all. I believe Durant is 13 for 21 from the field with LeBron as the primary defender against him. And yes, Durant can make some shots that not anybody else can, but it's maybe the Cavs should just say we should have Shumpert guard Durant for a lot of the time and just try to let LeBron save his leg so he can just not just put up 27 in the first half and then cool off in the second half. I mean, he's got to get 45 to 50 for them to win.
Yeah, and actually my strategy and why I shouldn't be a head coach in the league, my strategy yesterday was saying let LeBron roam and have Richard Jefferson guard Kevin Durant. Well, they did that a couple times, and
yikes,
Kevin Durant just tore apart Richard Jefferson. And to your point, Danny, about the more rest for LeBron, the fact of the matter is the Cavs bench, which is something that everyone was talking about the whole year as, you know, when they added Korver and Deron Williams, they're like, oh, now they have the pieces they need. But the truth is Cavs bench is incredibly weak, and I think the top four guys off the bench for the Warriors would probably be the number one guy off the Cavs bench. And the Cavs bench had 10 points on 3 of 14 shooting last night, and to be fair, that's just how they've been playing the whole series. Deron Williams may be the worst player on the court, and Kyle
Maybe? He's been arguably the worst player in NBA Finals history so far.
Yeah, but Kyle Korver makes a few shots, sure, but I've never been a Shumpert guy, and I just think the bench itself is the reason why this rest is an issue for LeBron, and there's a reason why the Warriors dominate every time LeBron's not on the court.
Yeah, it's kind of a couple different things. I also feel like Lou has never done a particularly good job of creating an identity when LeBron is off the floor, and that's something that Kerr really struggled with early on in this year, was they were trying these different lineups, you know, pairing Durant with Curry, staggering them, and all that kind of stuff, and that was the idea, was to use the regular season as a laboratory, because they knew they had to figure something out. And you can make there's a long discussion that could be had, which I don't feel like having, about whether that actually is working or not. But at least they tried it.
Oh, come on. Let's do it. Let's dive in.
Well, I mean, I just think that
I'm kidding.
I mean, I talked to you, but it has been a staple in the Locked On Warriors, my time on Locked On Warriors, to talk about the second unit. But I feel like at a certain point, though, the Warriors are able to get away from that because they have so much otherwise. And also, the other part of this story is it has become so strange to me that even during the Mark Jackson time, when the Warriors were a defense-first team, that they have this reputation as being, oh, they're a great scoring team that also defends. I mean, to me, the Warriors' most successful times are almost always started with their defense.
Yep.
Absolutely. I agree. Turnovers don't help, but yeah, I agree.
Well, yeah, I mean, their transition defense this year has been substantially, to me, I haven't checked it beyond my anecdotal memory, but like, I feel like their transition defense has been worse. So then that leads to greater variance, because when they keep the ball, like game one, when they only had 4 turnovers, they're not going to lose. But then if they turn it over, you know, 15 times or something like that, then it gets more winnable, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah, they turned it over 20 times in game two and they blow them out. It's just they have so much firepower. I mean, it's silly at times watching them play. It's special. And it's special because it's a fun brand of basketball, as we talked about a little while ago. It's equal opportunity. They share the ball. I mean, the assists, the numbers speak for themselves. And it's just crazy that literally they're one game away from going 16-0 in the playoffs. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
And also, speaking of defense and what you're saying, the, you know, how they're defense first team, really a lot of times, is that you think about all the conversations and what was being said, the narratives about the defense coming into this season, and Draymond was taking it personally and saying how, you know, this is going to be a worse defensive team without Bogut. How are they going to protect the rim? They don't have Azeele, and they're going off about that. But now we're all the way here with one game, you know, one win away from winning it all. And how many of any of those narratives are we talking about anymore? Even to talk about rebounding, Steph Curry had 13 rebounds last night. He has 29 rebounds in 3 games. But you just don't hear these narratives that people were talking about before. And, you know, it's just not an issue.
I'm still dumbfounded that Tristan Thompson is playing so little, because he was, for a lot of this season, he was Cleveland's third best player. And it's not like, to me, that he's the reason that the Cavs have been bad during those minutes. It's more just that the Warriors, when they play their 4 best guys, they're way better than anybody else. And I've been surprised by how Lou has basically moved away from the guy who was playing like 42 minutes a game, a lot of it against the Celtics.
Yeah, I think his mindset is that we have to try to outscore him. And you saw Korver play 24 minutes last night, finally knocked down a couple threes. And I just think that Tristan, I mean, the numbers and just watching it, the qualitative, he just hasn't had an impact. So even the minutes that he's been on the floor, he's not making his presence felt. And it's not just that he's not getting offensive rebounds. The Warriors have attacked him in pick and roll situations. The Warriors have absolutely feasted on Kevin Love. But even when Tristan's been out there, they're going to that matchup. I mean, Durant's bucket right before the three that gave the Warriors the lead, it was a simple just ball screen with Draymond. Durant gets one-on-one situation with Tristan. He beats him off the dribble easily and scores. I know Steph has broken down Tristan a couple times off the dribble and gotten buckets. So he's just not doing much. And so if he's not out there getting offensive rebounds and if he's not playing good defense, I actually think that you might as well throw Korver out there and see if he can just get hot from three.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And before the series, we were talking about how to stop Tristan Thompson. And we discussed this, that Zaza Pachulia, while he had we'll try to forget the game he had last night. It was not his best. But really, in terms of stopping Tristan Thompson on the boards, you can't beat him with athleticism, because the guy's physical. He can jump higher than you, and he attacks the boards. You need someone to just push him out of the way. And Zaza has no problem pushing. And, you know, I think that's one thing he's been great for in those minutes against Tristan, is just throwing him out of the way. And then Draymond obviously throws his body into people. But I think also, if you really look at it, there was a couple boards last night that Kevin Durant just outreached him. Like, his length alone can just take it away from Tristan as well. So I think it's just a terrible matchup for Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And it is tough for him. And also, last year, we saw him doing a better job defending in space. I think a lot of that is Stephen Curry's actually healthy this year. And surprisingly, that makes a difference. I not surprising to me, but surprising to some people, apparently. And something I wanted to ask you, too, is I got into this discussion with Kevin Pelton a little bit yesterday. I was actually surprised that he disagreed with me. I called the Durant three-pointer I think the word I used was the definitive play so far of the postseason for the Warriors. Do you guys have a different one, or is that the biggest one for you so far?
I would think it would have to be Zaza's closeout on Kawhi Leonard. No, okay, so that surprises me. So Kevin Pelton thinks that there's another signature play that pops out to him more than Durant's three?
Right. For him, it was the Curry dribbling around LeBron basically twice and then getting the layup.
I'm gonna be honest. I think that was a cool play,
but
I think it's actually one of the more overrated plays. And I told Drew this during the game, that if anything, I think the one he did on Gobert was kind of cooler. I think it was... I like that one more.
Gobert was immobile, and he's not.
No, I'm just saying, in terms of how it looked, I thought that was cooler.
Neither one of them even gets close to the one he did against the Clippers, but of course that wasn't in the playoffs and wasn't in these playoffs. So, I mean, for me, it's always hard when a specific highlight is similar but pales in comparison to a different one that has already happened. And also the Durant one, to me, the reason why it's much higher is also the stakes. I mean, Durant, that was in the final minute of a finals game, turned a deficit into an advantage, and they ended up actually winning.
It's the biggest shot of Kevin Durant's career. That is, I think it is by far the signature moment of the playoffs for the Warriors.
I completely agree. And there was a very interesting thing that happened in that last minute of the game last night that actually relates to game 7 of last year. So the two plays I'm speaking of is, first of all, you know, everyone talks about the block that LeBron had on Iguodala. Well, Iguodala gets him back and gets the strip against LeBron to end the game.
And then
night.
He got kicked.
Yeah, kicked like Draymond. No, but actually, the play that I'm thinking of is Kyrie Irving hit the shot, the three-pointer. He does a little dance step-back three on Steph last year and hits the three that clinches it. Now, last night, they had a two-for-one option going, and they're down one, and Kyrie Irving does his dance and doesn't pass the ball once, dribbles around, probably wastes 20 seconds on the shot clock, and then ends up just dancing and just doing a little step-back three again. And it was unnecessary at that moment, but I feel like in his head, he was thinking about Game 7 of last year, and that's what happens.
Yeah,
it was a little bit different of a shot. It was like a step back to his left. The one on Steph in Game 7 was a step back to his right. Also, Klay Thompson was guarding Kyrie last night. It was great defense. And, Klay did a good job of cutting him off and forcing him to either take a contested long two, or Kyrie created so much space and stepped back. I mean, Kyrie was 0-for-7 from three. And so you're really happy with him taking that shot and kind of bailing the Warriors out. But yeah, it was more the decision-making about not getting the shot off with about 30 to 32 seconds remaining in the game, because when Steph got the rebound, there were 26 seconds to go. And then Cleveland wasted 13 seconds and didn't foul until 13 seconds to go, and they should have fouled right away. Danny, would you have fouled right away, or do you think they should have maybe tried to let the Warriors play the possession out and then get a rebound with, you know, 2 or 3 seconds to go and advance the ball? Although now that I ask that, were they out of timeouts?
They were.
Yeah, they were out of timeouts.
Oh, no, right? Sorry. They were not out of timeouts at that point. They would have been. So let's see. Let me think about this, because they called their, I think they called their last timeout to advance it after the free throws that came out of that play. So they would have technically had one left. What I would have done is I would have trapped. Because so basically the point there is that you want to try to get the, there are two goals that you want. One is you want a guy other than Steph Curry to shoot free throws, and you want to try to encourage the Warriors to make a mistake. The best way to do both those is to trap. So you just go hard after Curry. And that was the other part of that play that Cleveland screwed up so badly beyond the passage of time, was they got exactly what they wanted once they finally actually put some heat on Curry. They got the ball to Draymond Green, and then they didn't foul him. And they didn't have a guy close enough to him. And I mean, it wasn't from, I have to watch it again. I guess it would be the third time. But I didn't think that like Draymond rushed the ball to Durant. It wasn't like he didn't. A tip. He held the ball for a second. I think he was probably like, wait, what the heck? And that is another part of it. And so it again gets to the idea that this all ties back to me to Ty Lue. While he did a lot of things well in this game, I was shocked, especially considering their veteran team, that it took Cleveland so long to figure out what the situation was. So the Kyrie part, that might have been him knowing the situation, just being like, I'm Kyrie Irving, I'm Keith Hernandez, that sort of a thing, and he's just going to do what he's going to do. But once he misses the shot, I totally get it taking a couple of seconds to realize, okay, it's a 2-second differential, what are we going to do there? And also, Lou apparently didn't yell to foul for like 8 seconds or something like that. But at a certain point, the players have to have their own agency and just kind of figure out, okay, you know, we're in this situation. Obviously, they've been in spots in their past where they've been, you know, it's been that kind of a differential, and okay, what do we want to do? And also just the wherewithal to go, okay, if we double him, he's going to pass the ball to the closest dude. Oh, great, that guy's the worst free throw shooter. Let's just have somebody over there to foul him. And they couldn't pull that off at all.
I also find interesting off of that, you're talking about Lou and the way he was coaching at the end, but isn't it interesting, for the first time it feels like people are really noticing how specific and how well prepared the Warriors are and how professional they are in these games. And they're attacking seams, and they're like a well-oiled machine. When in the past, people would always just say, oh, they're just freestyling out there. They're flinging the ball around. You know, you never really know what you're going to get. They just, you know, gunslinging out there. But now people are really seeing the actual precision that the Warriors are playing with right now.
That's a good point. It ties in with the idea of preparation. You know, so basically, like, what the Warriors have, they do have a little bit of the looseness. I remember there was that great quote that Mike Brown had when he kind of took over, when he came to the team. He was telling it recently, but it was when he came to the team. He's like, wait, you guys don't run plays all the time? Like, that sort of thing, because the Warriors don't do that. But they study film a lot. They know the tendencies, and they know what they're good at. They just trust their talent enough to fill in the gaps more. Instead of that, you can think about the college head coach. You brought up Ben Howland before. I think of Howland for this.
Yeah.
You know, choreographing every single second that everybody's on the floor, they have good enough talent and they've prepared them well enough that they don't have to do that.
Nope. Give the ball to Steph Curry, give the ball to Kevin Durant, and whoever is the guy that Kevin Love is guarding, just go up and set a ball screen. And I'm sorry to call out your fellow Bruin again, but defensively in the pick and roll, the Warriors are getting all they want. And I know that he ended up having 6 steals last night, and he made a couple good defensive plays. He had good hands at times. But man, oh man, the Warriors are certainly licking their chops when he's on the floor, because you just involve him. And it's not even just in ball screens. There's other times where he doesn't know who he's guarding. And he just kind of gets stuck in no man's land a lot.
Yeah, there are parts of that you just can't fix. And I actually think the Warriors have done a better job with him off ball than on ball, you know, just like getting him involved in just weird actions outside the play. And those are more complicated. That's something my podcast partner, Nate Duncan, used to talk about, is the idea of using him on pin downs and things like that, just because those are more complicated in terms of switching. Guys deal with on screen pick and rolls and all that kind of stuff more often. But what makes the Warriors different is all of the other stuff, the cuts that they do, the off ball type stuff. And so Love has not gotten comfortable with that. And it ties in with something that the Warriors have, which is very different from almost any other team really in NBA history, which is all these elite players who were all at bare minimum, you know, like solid on both ends. And I would say everybody but Curry is a meaningful plus on both ends. And so what that means is it's harder to exploit them than it is for a team like Cleveland, who they have unbelievable offensive talent. And, you know, if there was not a team like the Warriors in the league right now, they would be able to score. They'd be able to put up points on anybody. But most teams have to choose between one way or the other way with their best guys, and the Warriors don't have to.
Cavs versus Spurs in the NBA Finals with San Antonio having home court. Who wins that series?
I would have Cleveland as the favorites just because I didn't trust San Antonio's offense. I didn't think that they could score reliably. Kawhi is incredible, but the rest of their guys, you know, they couldn't really create that good of an offense. And remember, like, it's not like Memphis is world beaters on defense anymore. They did, and they scored a lot in that series, but I think Cleveland would have been favorites. Spurs could absolutely win, but I would have had Cleveland as the favorites.
Okay. I know Grant is going to say Spurs sweep.
No. I think it would have been a long series. I think it could have gone seven. I completely agree that Cavs would be favored. But I just, you know, I've told Drew this before that I think the Utah Jazz, if they were fully healthy and went into a series with the Cavs, I think they could even bring them to six games potentially.
Huh.
Danny's thinking to himself, you know, Grant, I disagree.
No, I just, it, you know, no. I just, I, there's, I'm not, I know it's, it, I feel like such a homer when I say this. I'm just not that big of a believer in the Cavs. I nothing in this series has made me believe otherwise. I think obviously at home and LeBron playing out of his mind like this, that they can be so dangerous. But there's nothing in me watching them that says on the road, even watching that Indiana series, they hardly beat the Pacers. They obviously won in the end and they swept them. But the point is, they're not the world beaters that I think that people assume they were just because they flew through the East.
So last night when it was 113-107 with about 2.5 minutes to go and LeBron gets the offensive rebound off the JR missed three and Kevin Love has a layup and Draymond Green strips him, we're that close to it being 115-107 and the game pretty much being over. And going into game four, you're starting to think, man, the Warriors kind of got to win this one. You don't want to come back tied 2-2. So obviously because Durant was, you know, Kevin Durant last night at the end, you know, the Warriors are in an incredible position. But last night's game the Cavs, like Danny said, probably should have won that game.
And I'm not disagreeing with that. And the Warriors shouldn't have been undefeated right now. The Spurs should have won game one. If Kawhi doesn't get hurt, the Warriors don't win game one against the Spurs. There's a couple other games that were just, you know, kind of lucked out just by making these huge runs. And not obviously a lot of it is our skill, but just, you know, there's some moments that we just kind of fell in the right place for us. I'm not saying the Warriors are completely, a team should never beat them ever in a game. I just think in terms of vulnerabilities, I think Cavs have more vulnerabilities than, you know, than people assume.
I agree.
That's certainly fair. And I think really what it would get down to is the idea of margin for error. So it would be a lot of closer games and those can go either way. So yeah, series certainly could have ended in six, but it could go in other directions too.
Totally agree.
All right. So I guess one last question that I have, Danny, do the Warriors complete the sweep?
I think they do, but I think the odds of it are a little bit lower than some of the stuff that I've heard over the course of the last 16 hours or whatever it's been, because I think Cleveland is good. You know, I think Cleveland should have won game three, so certainly they can do that. And so for me, really what it is, it's kind of the keep away. The danger zone is really somewhere between 10 and 15 points. And I feel like if the Warriors can push a lead like that, then maybe some of the Cavs just go, you know, like, and then it becomes one of those games. But I think Cleveland has the talent to win, absolutely. But if I were to say who is, like, you were to say, like, my life depends on picking somebody to win the game, I'm going to pick the Warriors to win.
I totally agree with what you're saying. And I actually think, I do think it's funny that people are writing off the Cavs as if, like, LeBron doesn't want to get embarrassed and swept. He's going to try everything. And the other players, you know, they have pride too. And the other thing is that I think the game will be decided in the first half. I truly believe that, as you were saying, if the Warriors take any big lead at all in the first half, I just can't see them having the energy to come back and the fight to beat the Warriors in the second half. If, you know, the Cavs come out early and punch early and take a double-digit lead going into halftime, maybe they feel empowered to take it. But, yeah, I think it's going to be decided a lot of it in the first half.
Yeah, and I really think the guy to watch tomorrow is Steph Curry. We talked about this on the show last night. Danny, in 13 career game fours not including last year's first round against the Rockets when he just came back after missing games 2 and 3, and then he sprained his knee. So throwing that game out, Steph in his career is averaging 31 points per game on like 47% from three in game fours.
And those have all been road games.
The majority of them.
Oh yeah. Yes, oh yeah. Not only the one since 20. Only the one since 20. Yeah, because those first.
Yeah,
because
he went wild against the Nuggets.
That's right.
In game four, and then I believe Spurs in game four. I can't remember what his stat line was there, but he's been incredible this year in game four and against the Spurs. I think he had 36 or 37. So I expect him to have a big game. And I said Warriors in five before the series started. So I don't want to be wrong twice. So I'm just going to say the Warriors win the series in five games.
That's certainly fair. Well, I'll let you guys tell a little bit about where people beyond Locked On Warriors, as soon as this thing resolves, where people can find you on. With you guys, it's fun because it's not only on social media, it's also on traditional media.
Yes, it is. So, on Friday night after the game, win or lose, we will be on NBC Sports Bay Area after the happy hour. So we'll probably be on at about 11 o'clock, but we'll also be on Facebook Live before that. On NBC Sports Bay Area's Facebook page. And yeah, Danny, we're really excited to hopefully build off of what you have created, because what you've done with Locked On Warriors is awesome. And we are not going to take this position lightly. We really want to continue the conversation that you've created on a daily basis, because I know Warriors fans look to you in a lot of different areas when they want to discuss their team.
Yeah, and actually, I'm disappointed that I didn't get to say longtime listener, first time caller when I started this this pod, because I listened to you to your pod a lot, Danny, and you're fantastic. And I love the stats and the info that you've passed along. So we're excited, and hopefully we'll get a healthy conversation going. And I'd hope, Danny, that you'd be willing to come back and talk with us as we go forward as well.
Certainly, yeah, and that'll be a part of what we can do moving forward. We'll have those conversations, and I'm excited to see where you guys take it. The fun of doing a podcast with the frequency of this is that you get to put your own fingerprints all over it, and I'm excited to see where you guys take it.
And lastly, Grant, where can people follow us on Twitter? I'm going to let you take this one.
Yeah, Drew wants me to do this. Okay, so it's at Drew Schiller, which is DrewSHiller. Drew, so you
say no C in the last name.
There you go. And then I am at G Liffman, is GLIFF, both as in Frank, M as in Mary, A, and then two N's as in Nancy. And Drew, why do I have two N's?
I don't know.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Right.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Danny.
Drew and Grant helpfully already laid out their ways that you can get in touch with them, social media and everything else. So I don't need to use the time to do it again. You just heard it. And I will be back, of course, for game four of the NBA Finals. That will be a special Friday night / Saturday morning episode of the show. And we'll see what happens. I'm legitimately unsure. I'm excited to see where these things go. And of course, I will be following this through Locked On Warriors through the end of the playoffs, and then I will fully hand over the reins to Drew and Grant, and they will do whatever work, hopefully great work, for Locked On Warriors moving forward. And then, as I said yesterday, I fully plan to do some form of Warriors podcasting moving forward, but I don't know what form that's going to take. I haven't spent much time considering it at this point. So please support the show, leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing, subscribe, download every episode. Those things are really important. You can check out sponsors. Yesterday I talked about SeatGeek, LO Warriors is the promo code, and check us out tomorrow. I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, for another couple days, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, at Danny LaRue on Twitter. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. And that's all for now. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.